So if you're looking for that shortcut, you know, to get truly informed on a topic and fast, the key facts, the context, all of it, you are in exactly the right place. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're taking a really critical look at a massive social program in Turkey. It's called the Mizlaki Eğitim Merkezi, or MİZEMEM.
And it sounds like a good idea on paper, but it sits on this kind of fault line between high school education and, well, what its critics are calling exploitation.
Yeah, state-sanctioned exploitation. And when we say massive, we mean it.
It's colossal. The sources we've looked at show that for this academic year, 2024-2025, there are almost 400,000 students enrolled.
392,887, to be precise, all between 15 and 18 years old.
That's the size of a city, an entire city of teenagers in this hybrid schoolwork system.
Exactly. And so our mission today is to really unpack why this program grew so explosively and why so many people are now calling it a, quote, legal cover for child labor. And, you know, the conversation really has to start with the human cost. That's what makes the structural problem so clear.
And that brings us to the tragic story of Aaron Dağ. He was just 16 years old. On July 30th, 2024, he died. He was electrocuted trying to repair an electric panel in a field. He was there as part of his MİZEM apprenticeship.
After his death, a trial took place. Three individuals were charged, and they received sanctions, some prison time, fines. But it was what his father, Murat Dağ, said that really gets to the heart of the problem.
What did she say?
He asked, "My child died in MİZEM. Why is no public official being prosecuted? The school sent my child there."
Wow. That question, it just cuts right through everything, doesn't it? Who is responsible when the system itself puts a kid in danger?
Exactly. So to answer that, we need to understand the structure. Just quickly, MİZEM is a four-year vocational school framework. It's been around since 2016. The requirements are, well, pretty low. You just need to be a middle school graduate and at least 14.
Okay, so what's the model?
It's the 1-4 split. One day a week, you're in a classroom for theoretical training.
And the other 4 days?
4 days a week, you are doing practical training inside a real business.
Okay, so let's dig into the official pitch. Because on the surface, it sounds like a pretty smart way to create skilled workers, right? Keep kids in school, but also give them job experience.
That's the idea. And for the student, the incentive is kind of twofold.
Okay.
First, you finish the program and you earn what's called an ustalık certificate. It's a master's certificate, a very valuable qualification that lets you open your own business.
So there's a real credential at the end. And what's the second part?
The second part is a standard high school diploma. But
yeah,
that's optional. You have to take extra classes, these difference lessons, to get it.
An optional diploma. But I have a feeling the real draw, especially for families struggling financially, is the paycheck. The immediate money.
Oh, absolutely. That is the engine driving this. Students get a portion of the minimum wage. It's legally mandated.
How much are we talking about?
At least 30% of the minimum wage for kids in 9th through 11th grade. And that bumps up to 50% for 12th graders, who are called kalfas or journeymen.
But the real genius of the system, I'm guessing, is on the employer side, the subsidies.
That is where it gets really interesting. The state makes hiring these kids unbelievably cheap for a business.
How so?
Well, first, the government pays for a big chunk of their wages, often straight from the National Unemployment Fund.
Okay, so the wage bill is lower.
Much lower. And crucially, the Ministry of National Education, the AEB, pays for all of the insurance premiums.
Wait, all of them?
Every single one. Occupational accidents, diseases, general health insurance. The business pays nothing for that.
So you're telling me the state removes the two biggest costs for an employer, wages and insurance?
Pretty much.
That seems like a perfect recipe for businesses to see these kids not as apprentices to be trained, but as, well, as cheap state-subsidized labor.
And that is precisely the core critique. The incentive shifts completely away from education and towards production. You can see it in the numbers. A former minister pointed out a staggering 784% increase in enrollment right after these financial changes were made.
784%.
Mm-hmm.
That one number tells you everything. This wasn't some sudden explosion of interest in vocational training. This was about economic pressure for the families who need the money and for the businesses who want the subsidy.
And when you have that kind of growth driven by money,
yeah,
the first things that get sacrificed are quality and safety.
Which brings us to the darkest part of this whole story, the safety violations, the deaths.
The numbers are, they're just devastating. Our sources confirm that in just the last two academic years, 2023 to 2025, at least 15 NISM students died in work-related incidents.
15 children, and that's just in this one program.
Right. It's part of a bigger tragic picture. The Worker Health and Safety Council recorded at least 85 child laborers dying in total in 2025.
And do we know how these MİZEM students died?
We do. The Union of Chambers of Turkish Engineers and Architects, TMMOB, they cataloged the incidents. It's horrific stuff. We're talking about kids falling from high-rise construction sites, being crushed by heavy industrial machines like sheet metal benders, and of course, electrocution, like what happened to Erin Dawes.
And this is where the whole thing just falls apart legally, right? These sectors, heavy industry, construction, they're supposed to be off limits to kids.
100%. The Turkish labor law is very clear. It restricts anyone aged 14 to 17 to light work.
Light work.
Yet you have the Ministry of Education's own MİZEM program putting these same kids into roles in, say, automotive workshops or construction sites, places the law itself says are too dangerous for them.
So there's been pushback on this,
Yeah.
surely.
Oh, yeah. Major institutional pushback. We're seeing sources note that the Istanbul Bar Association has published guidelines basically saying the minimum age for these jobs must be 18.
And what about doctors? The people who have to sign off on these kids being fit for work?
That's another flashpoint. The İzmir Family Doctors Association has publicly said they will refuse to issue the mandatory medical reports for MİZEM students.
They're refusing to participate.
Yes, because they believe the work is just inherently too dangerous. The Turkish Psychiatric Association has also put out a call for a country where workers, especially kids, don't die in what they call occupational homicides.
Not accidents, homicides.
That's the word they use. TMMOB agrees. They argue these are preventable deaths. They're employer homicides that happen because of a total failure to use basic safety measures and, critically, a lack of denetim oversight.
Okay, so let's shift gears from physical safety to the quality of the education itself. If you're only in a classroom one day a week, how much are you actually learning? Is the E in MİZEM even happening?
The research suggests it's Jill. It's really not. The academic standards are worryingly low. Even the profile of the students is telling. One teacher described them as having been filtered down two or three times.
Meaning they're the kids who struggled in the traditional school system.
Exactly. They enroll because they've had academic trouble, maybe they've failed classes, and they don't have the resources to keep up.
And that one day in school, it's supposed to cover everything: history, math, literature.
All the core subjects. How much can you possibly absorb in that kind of fractured model? Especially when your body's exhausted.
So what do the students themselves say?
That's where it gets really clear.
Oh.
They report being so physically worn out from their 4 days of work.
I bet they're working 10, 11-hour days sometimes.
Right. So they see that one school day as a holiday. It's a rest day. They're not there to learn. They're there to recover.
So the information just doesn't stick.
Not at all. Teachers say they come back the next week having forgotten everything. You can't build knowledge that way.
And then there's the diploma problem. That optional high school diploma relies on online classes, right?
It does, which is another systemic failure. Think about it. You have these exhausted kids commuting long hours.
They might not have stable internet access.
Or they're just too tired. They miss the classes. So the diploma, which is their supposed ticket to a better future, becomes almost impossible to get. It just degrades the entire academic value of the program.
This brings us to the operational flaws. The lack of that word you used, denatum, oversight. If the classroom isn't working, the on-the-job training has to be perfect. But is it?
It is fundamentally weak. Officially, the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Labor are supposed to coordinate it. But in reality, the whole burden falls on the school teachers.
The teachers have to do the workplace inspections.
Yes. And get this, they're often responsible for overseeing around 50 different workplaces at the same time.
Fee, that's impossible. You can't possibly do meaningful oversight for 50 different job sites. It's a guarantee that abuse is going to happen.
And the reports of abuse are just pervasive. We see students being used as basic cheap labor.
So not learning a trade.
No. They're cleaning, they're fetching things, doing simple repetitive tasks. We found one report of a student who was supposed to be learning hairdressing. Her master trainer, her usta, flat out refused to teach her how to braid hair.
And I imagine it gets worse than that. What about the money?
The financial exploitation is shocking. We have credible reports of employers demanding students give them back their state-supported wages.
How would they even do that?
They use fake receipts or just make illegal deductions. The employer basically pockets the state subsidy and the child gets nothing. One report found that the official records show the student was paid, but in reality, they never saw a single lira.
And the trainers themselves, the Ustalar, are they even qualified to teach?
Well, they have the master's certificate, but they almost never have any pedagogical training. They don't know how to teach.
They're masters of a craft, not masters of education.
Exactly. One teacher said they just don't know how to approach students. It can lead to a really toxic environment. One parent reported their son's Usta physically beat him.
So the system promises an education, but what it delivers is often unpaid, dangerous, and abusive labor.
Which brings us to the final and maybe the most important critique. What this system does to social inequality. If it's this broken, who is it really serving?
And we see a really clear pattern there, don't we? It's almost exclusively kids from working class families.
Overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
Children from lower social strata who don't have access to private tutoring or other support systems. There was one interview with a student that just laid it bare. He said, "My grades were bad. Most of my friends were taking private lessons. There was no one at home to help me and no money for private lessons. That's why I left school."
That's heartbreaking. And it points to the real academic critique, which is that MISEM isn't a ladder up. It's a system that just reproduces the existing class structure.
That's the argument. It channels disadvantaged kids directly onto the lowest rungs of the job market and keeps them there.
One critic called it an antimatter world, inside education, a place where real academic knowledge is devalued in favor of just work knowledge.
Meaning mechanical, repetitive tasks. It cements your class position instead of helping you escape it.
And that's the paradox we keep coming back to. The program gives this temporary financial relief, the wage, the insurance, which is a lifeline for a family in crisis.
But the price for that short-term relief is the child's entire long-term future, their education, their development, their safety.
So what does all this boil down to for you, the listener?
It means we have a state system that is supposed to be about education, but it is violating fundamental rights, the right to life, to security, to a proper education, all things guaranteed by the Turkish Constitution and international law. This is why advocacy groups are saying this isn't about small tweaks.
Mm.
The system needs a radical rights-based redesign that puts the child first.
So, to recap the whole deep dive, we have a state program that's meant to build a skilled workforce and give kids a high school diploma. But what it's actually doing, in far too many cases, is creating a pipeline for children as young as 14 into dangerous, exploitative jobs, all subsidized by the public. And the system is built so the state can evade responsibility. The kids have to find their own job placement, which lets the government off the hook for ensuring that workplace is safe or educational.
And that leads us to our final provocative thought for you to consider. Right now, MISEM is funded by taking public money, mostly from the unemployment fund, and giving it directly to private businesses who want cheap labor.
Hmm.
What if the state took that same amount of money, maybe even less, and instead invested it directly into public vocational schools?
You mean new equipment, better facilities, more teachers?
Exactly. Actually build up the public infrastructure to provide high-quality training in a safe environment. Wouldn't that create a better, more qualified workforce without sacrificing children's lives?
It seems obvious when you put it like that.
You have to ask yourself, what does it really say about a country's priorities? When subsidizing private companies for cheap child labor is seen as a more efficient solution than robustly investing in public education,